Hello and welcome to Biohacking with Brittany. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. I am a registered holistic nutritionist studying advanced fertility nutrition now, and biohacker, content creator, podcaster, all those things. And I'm just happy to have all of you listening every single week. And if you're new, welcome. This is an interesting episode as we dive into epigenetics and really looking at our biological age from that standpoint. It is really, well, we get into this in the show, but it is really interesting how popular longevity in general and this idea of chronological versus biological age has become such a popular topic. And it's interesting when you kind of look at this through the idea of epigenetics instead of some of the other tests that are out there on the market. So we get all into that. We talk about, you know, epigenetics versus traditional genetics and what like that even means. We talk about interventions and what happens if you do the test through true diagnostic and you get a higher score than your chronological age. What can we actually do about that? What interventions can we bring in that can say, hey, let's help reduce this age, whether it's nutrition or lifestyle or biohacking. We kind of talk a lot about that. And it's interesting how so many of the recommendations that are given are so useful for other things as well. And so it's all about kind of just sticking to them and making it a lifestyle so that when you do these tests, you actually get really good results. And it's not even just about the results of the test. It's like, so that you're not aging faster on a cellular level. So that's kind of what we get into. We talk about lifespan and health span. We talk about all sorts of things like that, what the test does, how it works. We talk about methylation, which is really interesting, and what that means for people who, you know, I talk about how I got my DNA tested and it indicated that I don't methylate very well. So what does that mean for my epigenetics? Like how do those pieces of the puzzle kind of fit together? So we kind of break down all of that. And this is a very interesting episode for sure. Very biohacky, as I like to say, when we're looking at data and measuring yourself and improving biomarkers is like a very biohacker thing to do. So happy to have this podcast episode with Hannah Wendt. It was awesome. And we also talk about some postpartum depression and things like that, and some things that we kind of see with pregnancy and women's health and menopause. And I really like to try to make some part of every podcast episode now be related to women more, because there's not a lot of space for women biohacking yet. There is, but it's still developing. So if we can kind of just have some part of every conversation that ties into women's health, I think that's super important in today's world, because let's be real, there's so many biohacking podcasts out there that are run by men and are very masculine in their ways of doing it, right? So arguably the biggest biohacking podcasts are very masculine, very men-focused, so male-focused. So just trying to shed light, trying to help all the ladies out there who are listening. Whether you're driving your car to pick up your kids, or you are retired, you're postmenopausal, you're hanging out in a sauna, or you're pregnant and you're like, man, how do I biohack this pregnancy? I am here for you. And so let me support you in any way that I can. Personally, what's going on? Oh my gosh, what's going on? A lot. Yeah, there's a lot going on. Not everything I can say right now, but I am moving in less than a month, which is scary because I'm not prepared. And if you ask me how packing is going, I would say I wouldn't know because I haven't started. So that's great. My free time right now will be packing up my life. And my work is wild. I am producing a course. I want it to come out next week, but man, am I swimming? I'm not even swimming. Am I drowning? I don't know. I'm something. I'm just trying to keep afloat, to be honest. I'm rebranding and I'm producing a course and I'm moving in a month. And there's just so much going on that I am pulling at straws a little bit. So it's fine. Everything will get done. I also signed up for a new education at the same time right now. So I'm studying advanced fertility nutrition. And so I have to factor that into every week. And it's kind of like life in the fast lane right now. And so I'm just kind of embracing it and making the best of it and trying to prioritize my health above all of these things. So for example, today, midday, I went downtown, had acupuncture done. Even though I could have worked for those hours, it's still more important to me to be healthy than it is to produce a course faster by 1 week or to pack a box of clothes. It's still, those things all need to be done, but I'm not willing to sacrifice my health in order to get there. And same with sleep, right? So I'm going to bed around 8:39 every night. I get up around 6. And it would be great to stay up all night and get everything done, but I'm just not willing to do it because I don't think that the payoff is there. I'm not willing to sacrifice my health in order to work more. So it's finding the balance, even when life is chaotic and busy, is really difficult. But I think what helps is just thinking about your priorities. So my priorities is always health is first. And then it's, well, actually, I don't know what the order are, but top three are, my relationships, including my marriage and my health. And then I don't even know what comes after that. I don't even know which order those two are in actually, but those are just some of my priorities. And so, yeah, and health includes self-care and, taking a hot bath and going to the gym and doing the things that make you feel good. Like if you want to get your nails done and all of that stuff, that is included in that. And that will always be at the top for me. I really hope so, because it's easy to kind of slip off of that. But it's tough. It is really tough right now. So hanging in there, if you're waiting for my course, thanks for waiting. We're working on it. It's almost done. We're editing it. And I'm in the final revisions of my new branding, which is more difficult than I thought it would be to make these branding decisions of colors and logos and fonts. And yeah, it's just more difficult. And if you run a business or if you've done anything of the sort like this, you understand that it's how do you portray your next level in business to everybody around you through three colors or this little element or icon? And how do you think that icon looks? I want it to look like a molecule. Oh, you think it looks like a flower? Oh, okay. Well, so you're just kind of going back and forth with different people trying to get different opinions. And I'm just trying to make the best out of it. So it's all good things. Honestly, it's all good things. It's all coming out. And I can't wait until everything is public, probably next week, week after. And I can just talk about everything openly and just everything. You can look at everything and the course will be open. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. It's been such a long, long time coming. And this course, in case you don't know, is my Baby Steps Preconception Health course. It's all about optimizing preconception health in today's world. Apparently, preconception health is a trending word, which I didn't know. I heard somebody say that on a different podcast, which I had no idea. I had no idea that that phrase was something that's becoming popular and trendy versus just seeing fertility. So that's interesting. I was thinking about that today. Anyway, enjoy this episode. A shout out to the sponsors of this week. Bless their hearts. I could not do the show without them. Honestly, I could not do it without them. And the podcast will continue on for forever as long as I can have it. And that is possible because I have sponsors. And just to be totally frank, that is how that happens. It is a lot of work to put a podcast episode together. And without sponsors, it just would not be possible. I would not financially be able to do it. So thank you so much to everybody who supports them, because you actually are supporting my business through supporting them. and I'm a small little woman-owned business with a couple of contractors, and that's it. Like, it's literally me and like two people I've never met who live all over the world. So yeah. So shout out to Mimio. I stumbled upon Mimio in 2023, and they are actually one of my favorite supplements that I found last year. And they combine four different ingredients that are biomimetic, which means that they are naturally found in the body. And they combine them together how they are found in the body. And it is all about mimicking the benefits of a fast. So instead of doing a 24-hour, 36-hour fast, you can actually take their supplement and get the same benefits. Benefits including like optimizing cellular health, optimizing autophagy, being able to assist with weight management, energy boosting, things like that. So I love what they're doing over there, and they are great friends of mine. And so I love, 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 love Mimio. Great longevity supplement, probably one of the best. And also just very forward thinking, the way that they run their business, all of the like materials that they use. It's very, very eco-friendly. And I also love that as well. So Mimio is spelled M-I-M-I-O, Mimio. And you can use my discount code BIOHACKINGBRITTANY in all capitals. And definitely check that out. If you're someone who's like, I want the benefits of fasting, but I don't want to fast, this is for you. And I know there's a lot of ladies out there who are like that, like myself. And then a shout out to Bioptimizers. Oh my gosh. Okay. This is like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this yet. Maybe I should say it. Maybe I shouldn't say it. Okay, fine. I'll just say it. They have a new product that came out. It's called Cycle Care. I actually don't even know if it's on their website yet, but this is all about optimizing your menstrual cycle. I have yet to take it. It literally arrived at my house yesterday, and it has a bunch of different herbs in it that help balance out your menstrual cycle. So helps with all of the symptoms that goes with it. It promotes healthy harmony in the nervous, immune, hormonal, and digestive systems. I am so happy about this because Bioptimizers is easily one of my favorite brands that I've worked with for over 2 years. And the fact that they have now come out with a female product, yes, they get all the snaps for that. Like, good job. This is a game changer. They are so big in the supplement space. And the fact that they took the time to create something that is a herbal blend to help regulate our menstrual cycles, we love that. So some of the ingredients, let me just read them to you. Like tribulus fruit, white peony root. I was just writing about that in my course, actually. Silk tree bark, safflower flower. There's so many in here. And I'm just happy about this. But, you know, Bioptimizers is obviously known for the magnesium, digestive enzymes, and probiotics. Those are the three that I take every single day from them. And I will be adding this in. If you want to order Bioptimizers, use the discount code BIOHACKINGBRITTANY. It will get you the most discount possible ever. So I just sent this to my friend who's having digestive discomfort. And I said, use my link, use my code, and you're welcome. You know, you're going to save a bunch of money. So that's Bioptimizers, link to my show notes on my website. It's kind of everywhere. And that's their Cycle Care female product, which is brand new. So good for them. And yeah, let me know what you think. So enjoy this episode. I think all the little, I shouldn't say that, all the great and mighty female biohackers out there and non-female biohackers are going to enjoy this because it's so in the data and in the weeds. And I learned a lot, and I love when I learn from my guests. So stay tuned for another episode coming next Tuesday. We produce episodes for every Tuesday and Friday, and there might be a course that drops next week. There might not be. We don't know. I'm just keeping it real with you, and that's totally fine. So the waitlist is still up. If you want to join it, you get $100 off the course, and yeah, you get early access before it goes public. So thank you for listening, and I will catch you next week for another one. Welcome to Biohacking with Brittany, and thank you for tuning into another episode today. Today, we have the privilege of hosting Hannah Wendt, who is a trailblazer in the field of epigenetics and a passionate advocate for longevity research. She is the co-founder for True Diagnostic, which we're going to get into, and the founder for Everything Epigenetics. And her work is really at the forefront of understanding how our DNA's regulation impacts our health and aging process. So we're going to get into biology, the technologies that she's developing, her personal experience, and also what we can do to kind of optimize our own biological age versus our chronological age. So Hannah, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brittany. I'm super excited to be here and talk to your audience. Excited to get into the weeds of things.
Yes, me too. So what kind of initially sparked your interest in this field? Like, it's a very, very specific space to kind of play in. So I'm curious what led you to epigenetics.
Yeah, I wish I had, you know, a better answer, but I'll kind of give you a little bit of an insight into my journey and how I got here. My better answer, I guess, maybe what I mean by that is a less unique, you know, traditional schooling background. I was always interested in science ever since I can remember, you know, always figuring out the way how things worked, you know, kind of studying life itself, right? Biology. So originally I wanted to become a veterinarian. I wanted to actually go to school for genetic counseling and helping people interpret their genetic data, which, you know, directly aligns with epigenetics. And I'm sure we'll talk about the difference between the two. But it really wasn't until I was convinced to not go back to school and then took a position at a very unique compounding pharmacy right outside of Lexington, Kentucky. This pharmacy actually specialized in peptide products and became the fourth fastest growing healthcare company in the nation in 2019. And I really worked on selling products to those providers we service, which was a really niche group of all cash pay, integrative, functional, preventative healthcare, if you will. There's a lot of different language and nomenclature you can use there. And I really educated those on how to use these molecules, you know, the best dosing, best practices. That is when I feel like my life fundamentally changed for the better, where I realized we could focus on more of this healthcare model rather than this sick care model. But what really led me into the epigenetic world and space was that we always wanted a way to prove that these peptides we were working with really worked on more of a molecular level instead of just kind of the subjective, you know, feel good, feel better after taking them. So we wanted this data to present to regulatory based agencies and thought, okay, well, you know, what's the biggest risk factor of all-cause mortality or morbidity? Well, it's aging itself. And how do we measure aging? You know, there's a lot of other biological age types of algorithms out there, but we know from the data and research that looking at these epigenetic markers is going to be the best way. So we made a decision to kind of set up a new company and a new lab in Lexington, Kentucky, and ran our first sample in July of 2020 and have the largest private epigenetic database ever created to date and have run around 75,000 samples and are, you know, have been growing ever since. So that was a long-winded answer, Brittany, but hopefully it just gives you a little bit of insight from kind of, you know, day one to growing the company and building it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have had my biological age tested in actually many different ways. It's, you know, obviously you know this, but longevity is such a hot topic right now. So it makes sense that people are kind of adding this to the services that they might offer. But it's really interesting when you get all of these different answers and you're like, okay, actually, which one is the most true out of this? So for example, like I've had my age tested based off of my blood biomarkers of hormones, vitamin and mineral levels. I've had it based off of my gut health, and I've had it based off of glycans and how my glycans are kind of performing, I guess. And so I'm curious how you kind of see these other players in the field. If people are doing these tests, like, is it valuable for them to kind of get that glimpse? Or would you just say, no, we should really just be looking at like the methylation and the epigenetics and the way that you guys look at it?
Yeah, great question. I want to preface by saying I'm obviously very biased, right? Don't take my word for it. I'm of course going to opt in for the epigenetic DNA methylation based testing, but I have, I would say, very, very good reasoning for that as well. I think epigenetics is this layer in the multiome that looks the most promising. What I mean by, you know, multiome is kind of these, you know, unique, integrated, multiple layers of biology that we have. We kind of have our genome, study of our DNA that doesn't change. Then our epigenetics, which is how our genes are modified. moving to the transcriptome, which is how our genes turn actionable in information, all the way to our proteins and metabolites and phenomics, which is kind of the phenotypic outwards expression of our observable traits. So all of those play a unique role in our health, but epigenetics is in a unique layer because it is going to be used to be a predictor, essentially, of everything else. So really looking at that epigenetic layer, the number one thing you want to look at when maybe deciding on a biological HS or if it's right for you is it predictive of outcomes? If yes, great. If no, then you know, you may not be the right test for you, because at least that's what I would want to know, right? I want to take a test and I want to know if I'm at an increased risk of all-cause mortality and morbidity. And the really great thing about the epigenetics-based tests too is that these are going to be modifiable and changeable based off of literature and research. And you're walking kind of a fine line there too, Brittany, because you want these clocks to respond to intervention, but you don't want them to respond too much, right? We need to make sure we're actually capturing an underlying biological signal and not just maybe outside noise from the algorithm itself. So there's, you know, I'm sure we'll get into maybe some interventional trials later, but there's just one study in particular that has really looked at reversal of what we call these, you know, epigenetic DNA methylation biological age clocks that's been done in humans to date.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. But before we kind of dive into that, I'd love to just take a step back and kind of explain an overview of what epigenetics is and how does this differ from traditional genetics if someone is kind of hearing this for the first time. And then maybe we can even explain, you know, methylation and how it relates to it.
Oh, 100%. I love this question. It's, you know, fundamental in kind of understanding what we're really looking at and studying here at True Diagnostics. So, you know, the difference between genetics and epigenetics, think of genetics as the hardware, right? Of your laptop or your computer, and the epigenetics as the software. So the software is talking to the hardware. It's telling it how to run. There are a lot of other different, you know, kind of comparisons you can make between the two. But this is where you get the term nature versus nurture. Your genetics is going to be your nature. These are going to be markers that are the same in every single cell type. They're inherited by our parents. We only measure these once because they don't change unless you're doing some, you know, crazy gene editing. And lastly, the clinical utility is limited, meaning I can tell you a risk based on your genetic infrastructure, but you are not going to change those results, right? So we can inform you about risk, but unfortunately, we cannot change that outcome. Epigenetics, on the other hand, is different in almost every single cell type. It is your nurture. It's how the environment and your behavior is really controlling the expression levels of your genes. So almost all of these signals are not inherited. There's a small fraction that can be, but for the most part, they're not inherited from parents. These markers can change across our lifetime, so we can remeasure these. We can actually reduce risk, which is just profound. So they can be more clinically informative since we can change markers that actually affect the risk. So I really liked at the beginning too, Brittany, how you said, you know, this is a hot topic, right? It's sexy. You're seeing it everywhere. Epigenetics, longevity, biological aging. I start to see a theme of maybe expressions or phrases or what people are talking about on social media, such as your DNA is not your destiny. You're in the driver's seat of your own health. You know, food is medicine. You are what you eat, right? We're no longer the victims of our DNA, whatever the next big kind of marketing catch is. What they don't know, though, which is kind of, it's really funny to me at least, is they're actually describing epigenetics without directly stating it, which I think is, you know, a really interesting way to look at it. So that's really the difference between the two.
Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's a big problem because magnesium is involved in more than 300 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end because there's a special offer happening and this could be exactly what you need. Okay, here we go. Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you sometimes constipated? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here's what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't use or absorb. That's why I exclusively recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bioptimizer supplements are best in class, which is why I use them. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. They are so confident that they offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. Just go to bioptimizers.com/biohackingbrittany. In addition to the discount you get by using my promo code biohackingbrittany, you get gifts with your purchase. That's right. You actually get gifts. Up to 2 travel-sized bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. So act fast. This is a limited time offer. You can go to bioptimizers.com/biohackingbrittany. Use my code. It's linked in my show notes on my website and start taking your magnesium today. Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, there's different ways that people are going about it. And I like, even I saw on your website today, you have a quote, I think it says like biology versus birthday. And I was like, wow, that's such a good way to even just like identify the two different ways of measuring age. Like that's such a interesting way to look at it. But yeah, like I said, it is becoming a very hot topic and so it should be, right? Like if age is such a significant factor in how we age and how rapidly we age is such a significant factor in all cause mortality and different diseases, we should be studying it and we should be kind of coming out with more research and products and books and things that can help us understand it more. I have a, you know, interesting, I was just thinking about this when you were explaining methylation is I had my DNA tested a while ago, like a few years ago. And obviously, once you get your DNA tested, you don't really need to do it again. It's a blueprint. It's not going to change. And one of the things that they looked at were my methylation pathways. And they showed me like this DNA relates, or these genetics relate to how you methylate. And I actually have some parts of my methylation pathways that are not great. So for example, when I ever have like B vitamins, I always take methylated B vitamins because I don't methylate very well, things like that. So it does actually influence my decisions. So if you do a DNA test like that and it indicates, hey, you don't methylate very well, how does that kind of impact epigenetics and the way that you use your test and everything? Like I'm just trying to connect the dots there.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, I spend most of my time actually speaking with healthcare providers day in and day out. And I get this question from them too. So it's super common. And, you know, we really like to differentiate between the two. So what you just defined, Brittany, is, you know, kind of the DNA methylation as it relates to genetics. So by definition, methylation is a biochemical process that just involves the addition of a methyl group to a molecule, a CH3 group. This is done on DNA, RNA, proteins, and it can happen in many, many pathways with a ton of what we call, you know, different methyl donors. So if something is methylated or that CH3 group is present, that modification alters the way in which genes are expressed, affecting the way in which, you know, the body develops and functions. So that's what I mean when I talk about DNA methylation and epigenetics. But for years, when most people reference methylation, they aren't talking about that. They're usually asking, you know, what you just asked me. They're talking about more of that genetic pathway that's, you know, mostly related to the MTHFR gene. So this gene in particular is really important. It provides a lot of instructions for producing an enzyme called the methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase. That's the acronym from MTHFR. It's a mouthful. So that enzyme, Brittany, is involved in a process known as, you know, the methylation cycle. And it's really responsible for converting the amino acid homocysteine to methionine, which is, you know, an essential amino acid. It's required for a lot of biological based processes, including things like DNA synthesis and protein production. So, you know, there's more specific processes that are going on than the one that I mentioned there. But basically, you need methionine because that's used for the body to produce a molecule called SAMe, a which is involved in a lot of numerous cellular processes, including DNA methylation itself, neurotransmitter synthesis, liver function. So if you're not methylating properly, if you have a specific kind of MTHFR variant, you may need to supplement to help you, you know, methylate. So that's kind of the connection there. It's a great question. It's a great entryway. You know, it's a way we educate our healthcare providers on kind of the difference between genetics and epigenetics itself.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And it's, yeah, something I've dug into, because especially when you do a test like that and you get those results, you want to understand it and the implications for your life, right? Like, what does this actually mean day to day? It is helpful to understand the science, but we do have to actually make it applicable. And how does that impact my healthy habits and my decisions? So yeah, thank you for explaining that. I know that you have over 30 approved clinical trials, which is very impressive. And I would love to know your favorite kind of groundbreaking findings that your research has uncovered about longevity or health interventions or anything like that.
Yeah. So there are a lot of different, you know, clinical trials out there. I think, you know, the one thing I want to say is, you know, we're still answering a lot of these questions, right? Even the simple questions as to what is aging, right? I guess the field itself really hasn't even defined biological aging. So when we're studying science and we're looking at these markers, it's really just about getting closer and closer to the truth, right? Understanding this a little bit more. So we have to really understand, you know, that we're uncovering a lot of different aspects as it relates to these epigenetic DNA methylation markers. And the studies are very new, which makes it, you know, that much more exciting. The first iPhone was actually released even before if we really knew about epigenetics and kind of these biological age clocks. So we have to have a bit of, you know, humility when kind of working with this data and science. All that being said, though, my favorite one that I probably point people to in particular, I mean, I kind of hinted at it earlier, is going to be the one that's published. It's going to be this calorie randomized control trial, if you've heard about it, Brittany, which is basically just a 10% overall caloric restriction in healthy adults, non-obese adults over a 2-year period. That happened, that was published about a year ago in Nature. And again, I point people to that one because it's gone through the publication process. It's been, you know, proven to work time and time again as I'm consulting people. Obviously, you know, with most of your audience being women, you have to be very careful with restricting calories. There's a time, there's a place. It's important to consult with your healthcare provider. You know, obviously, if we're pregnant, you know, breastfeeding, we don't want to deplete nutrients even further. So it definitely is more of a balancing act. But we do see one of our clocks in particular, this pace of aging clock, drastically decrease with just a little bit of caloric restriction.
Let's talk about Mimio, a breakthrough longevity supplement that hacks your biology to help you look and feel younger. It was created by PhDs in nutrition from over 7 years of clinical research, and Mimio was designed to mimic the longevity benefits of fasting in a simple daily pill. Not only has Mimio been shown to extend lifespan in animals by 96%, but users have been able to take as much as 2.5 years off their biological age in just 8 weeks. How? Mimio's groundbreaking biomimetic formula uses a patented blend of all-natural metabolites that work together to help your cellular health from the inside out. First, there's OEA, which is a metabolic supercharger clinically proven to help control appetite and promote fat metabolism, so you can crush those cravings and silence food noise throughout the day. Then there's spermidine, the cellular autophagy activator, helping clear out cellular junk to boost cognition, clear brain fog, and refresh your cells. Next, there's nicotinamide, a broad-spectrum NAD plus booster that's been shown to improve everything from metabolism to skin glow to immune health. And lastly, there's PEA, one of the body's most powerful rest and repair molecules that helps control inflammation, relieve discomfort, and enhance recovery so you can get that youthful energy back. Mimio is designed to work like a super fast, super efficient fasting diet, but without actually having to fast. It's all about tapping into the power of your own biology, giving your body the cheat code to work its best, making you feel younger and healthier today. You can try Mimio today. Use my discount code at checkout, which is BiohackingBrittany, And you can get all of these benefits in a simple supplement today. Again, that's Biohacking Brittany in all capitals. So definitely try it and let me know what you think.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I have heard of that one. I'm curious if it goes the other way as well. Like, you know, there are benefits if you reduce it by 10%, but if you overdo it as well, do you think that there would be some sort of negative impact on your epigenetics, especially if you're female in your fertile years, probably?
Yeah, in terms of, you mean just maybe overeating, Brittany?
Yeah, or overeating or overfasting. Like, would it kind of be like, or I guess which would be undereating, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I see. Yeah. No, I definitely understand. Absolutely. I would say we don't have maybe any of that published quite yet, but subjectively, I've seen people, one woman in particular that comes to mind, who was just fasting, you know, day in and day out, just was way under eating. And they were, you know, probably some of the worst biological age results that I've ever seen from a comprehensive standpoint. So definitely is, you know, a balancing act. But I also want to be clear and make sure by caloric restriction, we just mean eating less, right? Not necessarily intermittent fasting or time restricted feeding. There are ways you can restrict calories that I think could be more beneficial to your health. And, you know, one example I want to give, and then would love to hear your thoughts, Brittany, as well, is if you're a meat eater, you're, you know, an omnivore and you eat, you know, protein heavy breakfast, maybe it's a couple eggs and maybe you eat traditional like turkey or bacon sausage, or excuse me, if you eat traditional like sausage or bacon, it's going to be, you know, really high in fat, you know, your nutrients are, you know, going to be probably not the healthiest as it relates to that. But if you just transition to turkey bacon or turkey sausage, for example, you're actually cutting out around 300 to 400 calories and you're getting a better nutrient profile without really noticing it, right? If you keep eating at a 10% caloric deficit on a 2000 base caloric diet, that's, you know, 200 calories already, even more than that you're saving. So I think there's a conversation to be had also about the quality of your diet, right? Over, you know, quantity and more whole foods, less artificial foods, which we know is going to be beneficial for aging as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, processed food in general is just not really food a lot of the time. It's such a complex topic. And I've talked about it a lot because, you know, we are facing obviously the accessibility and affordability issues of, you know, food, especially in North America. So I would love for everybody to eat a whole foods organic diet, but for a lot of people, that's not possible all of the time, 100% of the time. And I don't even do that 100% of the time. So it's just, but when you look at things like epigenetics and how you're aging and you look at how that food really impacts you on a microcellular level, you're like, damn, like this is serious. This is actually making a big difference in my life. And so it's encouragement to kind of steer clear and like choose the whole food, the whole piece of fruit rather than the fruit juice, you know, which is going to spike your blood sugar and has less fiber in it. And, you know, all of these things like that. Like, so it's complex and it's hard and there's so many factors to it. But I think this is a really important factor is like how we are aging based off of our nutrition decisions. It really does matter. And I know that something that you talk about a lot is like the role of lifestyle interventions and how this really impacts our biological aging. So are there any interventions that you have seen, like other than the one you just mentioned, that really make a difference? Like if someone comes to you and they get a bad result and they're maybe upset and they have this emotional response, like what do you say to them? Like how do you say, hey, look, this is what you can do to improve your markers?
Yeah, I talk about this a lot personally as well, you know, on my pages and everything where, you know, we'll receive a pretty common response, which is, hey, my biological age is wrong. And we're like, all right, well, let's talk about this. You know, are you, you know, I'll just go through a list and then we can, you know, pick more to dive into. So we'll kind of do a comprehensive overview. And again, listen to the person, understand their lifestyle. But one of these is always the culprit. And it's either they're consuming food that is draining instead of fueling, right? Fast food, artificial flavorings, just kind of what we talked about. They are not performing at a physical level. They're not working out whatsoever. They are drinking alcohol, even, yes, one drink. Or they are, you know, smoking, you know, doing recreational drugs. They have unresolved trauma in the past, whether it's personal, whether it's interconnected with family or, you know, friends, really affecting kind of their closeness in relationships. That's a big part of it as well. The last two being that they're not sleeping. They're not tracking their sleep, right? They're not getting quantity sleep. They aren't well rested when they wake up. They go to bed at, you know, midnight, 2 a.m. They're having all of these kind of wake up events. And then lastly, and I think one that's really, really hard and especially, you know, with us and where we are in life, but they just spend most of their free time scrolling, you know, mindlessly on their phone. So everything, yeah, I just named there are kind of habits, right? It's how you're living your life. So I'm super, super passionate about lowering biological age through simple lifestyle hacks.
Yeah, it's funny how so many of those habits and hacks actually help solve so many issues. So like, for example, I like am moving more into the biohacking fertility space and I'm doing a lot of studying about it right now. I'm releasing a course about it. And everything that you mentioned is what I talk about in my course for optimizing fertility, everything of like, are you being active? How much screen time are you seeing? Like, are you eating correctly? Are you detoxing? Like all of these things. So it's not like it's these groundbreaking things that you actually need to do. A lot of the time, the things that actually move the needle the most are free or somehow free and are things that you have very likely heard before. It's not like, hey, take this very expensive supplement that you can only get in this one place that comes from the Amazon rainforest or whatever, you know? It's actually just like, get outside, move your body, get some sunshine, but do it every day so that you're, so it like stacks and you actually get the benefits and it becomes a lifestyle. That's the challenging part, is sticking to it and letting it become a habit.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, we can spend all day, Brittany, talking about these lifestyle factors and, you know, what people need to work on. If you're listening to this and you're like, oh shit, I could be doing this, then that's probably what you need to work on, right? Listen to yourself. You know yourself best. If it's hard to follow your own advice, that's why we have people like you, Brittany. That's why we have, you know, healthcare providers that just focus on optimizing overall health. Because if it was easy, we wouldn't have functional medicine doctors or integrative or, you know, kind of anti-aging based doctors, because it's not easy. I mean, it's really changing your way of life, kind of, you know, stirring the pot in terms of wrecking everything we once knew. Right. It's, and, you know, we also have to be kind to ourselves and accept the fact that, you know, we're humans, we're willing to give up, you know, some things, but, you know, be very strict on others. So I think it's definitely a balancing act. And I think as we become older, it can become easier. It can become harder with different things that life throws at us. But I think the more you can have a consistent routine, the better you're just going to feel emotionally, physically, spiritually. And the more that is going to be reflected in your biological age outcomes and just epigenetics in general.
Yeah, absolutely. How does alcohol impact epigenetics and your biological age that you've seen?
Yeah, not in a positive way, I would say. So yeah, you know, there were some studies really, really early on that came out regarding kind of drinking, consuming alcohol. In biological aging, meaning, you know, drinking one beer or one glass of wine could actually be beneficial for kind of aging. It was a really, you know, kind of just loosely done epidemiological based study, if you will. But what we're noticing is any alcohol consumption is going to speed up that aging. In particular, there's a 2.22 epigenetic age acceleration for people who have alcohol use disorder. And, you know, you think alcohol use disorder, oh, wow, what does that look like? You know, it's probably a lot of alcohol. It's actually not. It's about 7 drinks a week for women and double that for men. So if you think about our society and you think about, I don't know, friends getting together, you're watching a sporting event or, you know, you're catching up, you're meeting with family members and, you know, you just get pressured into consuming alcohol. And, you know, if you're doing that all weekend, that's just, you know, 2 drinks a day, right? So it can add up really, really quickly. I would say the pushback that we always get here when we answer this question or comments, I definitely want to welcome comments and feedback, is that alcohol may be health promoting because it's one of the pillars of Blue Zone research, right? Where many centenarians have a glass of wine to wind down after the day. And if you live in one of the Blue Zones, and if you have a very simple way of life, and you're also exercising, you're not on your phone, you're eating healthy, you have low stress, you're sleeping great, then you may be able to enjoy a glass of wine every once in a while. But I can guarantee you that, you know, the standard American way of life, it does not exactly replicate what you're seeing with those Blue Zones. It's a completely different way of life, right? So I think people use that as an easy out or an excuse to say, oh, well, you know, they're doing fine. I can have a glass of wine, right? And it's just not the same.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that when you were saying that, because I just saw something recently of, you know, and it always kind of circulates in the news of this woman just turned 100 and, you know, what's your secret? And she's like being interviewed on this like news show. And she's like, well, you know, I have a cigarette a day and I drink a glass of red wine a night. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, wow, like the people hearing this are thinking, oh, this justifies my behavior. Like she lived to 100, so I can have red wine. What's wrong with that? It's got polyphenols in it. It's, you know, got antioxidants, whatever. And it's exactly like you said, like you hear that and you think, oh, it's okay. But in reality, the question is like, how did she live most of her life, lifestyle wise, activity wise? And, you know, what was she doing before technology came around and that type of thing? But even more is like those Blue Zones. It's the exact same thing of like, how do they live? They probably live in a place that is more nature focused, less of a city, less pollution, less EMF, less radiation. They are probably more active. They probably go to bed when the sun goes down. They probably live a much more natural lifestyle. And I've been to a Blue Zone in Costa Rica, and that's actually what it is like. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So you can't just like pick and choose the data that you want to follow. Like you have to kind of look at the full picture and kind of understand really where it's coming from a bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And again, goes back to the conversation. Hey, if you're doing everything right, you know, you truly enjoy the taste of wine, or I don't know, want to wind down, or, you know, if you have a healthy relationship, I guess is what I'm trying to say, then sure, enjoy a glass of wine, you know, drink it, don't feel guilty about it and move on. Right. But, you know, I just from kind of and I don't want to generalize either, but if we are, I just simply don't think it can be applied the same as the Blue Zones in the standard American way of living. Yeah.
I 100% agree. So if someone gets a result and it's not what they want it to be, and then they put some lifestyle changes into place, like what is the time frame for kind of turning this around? And how long does somebody need to be sober or active every single day in order for that age to change?
Yeah, it all comes down to kind of, again, the biological age clock you're using, Brittany, and, you know, how responsive they are. So I mentioned that pace of aging earlier, or people call it the dividend pace. This one is going to actually be so precise that you can actually test it a little bit more quick. So usually people can even start to retest this every 2 to 3 months if they wanted to. So if you want more of that N of one precision-based medicine, you know, do it every 8 weeks, right? But if you're wanting to give yourself some more time to actually see a change, we have kind of this larger kit that includes all of our algorithms. And we would say, you know, to be on the safe side, you wouldn't do every 6 months. People do every 12 months or so. Again, going back to the fact we're human, right? It takes us a while to to kind of decide what we want to do to track it, right? So as long as you are being compliant with the specific protocol, you know, go for it. And as little as 2 months, usually I would say on average, the retest window is going to be every 6 months or so.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. I figured it was something within those zones. What has been the biggest change that you have seen a client or customer have in their age?
Yeah. So in the biological age reductions, you know, any type of reduction is massive. I've seen, you know, kind of multi-year age reductions with more of those procedural based type of therapies, Brittany, like the, you know, exosomes type of stem cells, even the plasma type of exchange, or, you know, TPE, the therapeutic plasma exchange, and young plasma infusions. those are obviously going to be quite intense therapies and procedures and very expensive. But the reason they do this before and after testing too is to really see what we can pick up, right? Is it working? Is it not working? And just because it works for one person doesn't mean it's going to work for you either, which is, again, why I love what you do, Brittany, and kind of the biohacking your own health. It's a very personalized journey for you. So once you get more into kind of those larger procedural based studies, we do see larger decreases. But again, the dosing is very specific, right? The timing between before and after testing is very specific to the user.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think it's, it's encouraging, especially if you test multiple times to see that number drop. At least that's what I found for myself. Even if it drops a little bit, and then it kind of just, it reiterates like, oh, what you're doing is actually working. Like, oh, you know, you're being more active. We can now see this on a very micro level and how you're benefiting from it. So there is something to be said about retesting. I wouldn't necessarily just go into doing a test like True Diagnostic and be like, oh, this is a one and done thing, because you're probably always going to want to try to improve it. Or maybe you get a great result and maybe, you know, 6 months later, you're kind of checking, hey, is this still great? Is this still working? Is what I'm doing still working, I guess. So I think there's something to be said about kind of just like staying on top of it. I guess if you're someone super, super healthy, maybe you could do once a year, but it sounds like 6 months is probably the longest you'd want to leave it. I'm curious how this type of testing kind of plays into fertility, pregnancy, postpartum. Have you seen the numbers there? And like, what kind of, like, if you're pregnant, does it show that your biological age is like super high? Because it's kind of like being pregnant is actually very like inflammatory. Or like what does that look like?
Yeah. So I'm super excited to chat with you about this first and foremost, just because the interest you have from your listeners. And I was listening to you and Angela Foster actually speak on a previous episode. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to really dive deep into epigenetics and women's health and kind of the implication and, you know, what to look out for. So absolutely, pregnancy is going to really advance those biological age clocks. I mean, this makes sense, but we do have the research actually behind it as well. Now, what I think though, it's even more interesting is that it's a transient effect, meaning you're going to see increases in any type of stressor, obviously pregnancy being, you know, one of, if not the largest stressor a woman ever goes through in their life, but it's going to actually bounce back or even better than baseline 2 to 3 months postpartum. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons for why that could be. I'm sure you're probably even more of an expert there than I am. But obviously the, you know, kind of stress that comes along with that, the mental health aspect, right? The nutrition depletion, there are a lot of different factors in play. So it definitely has to be a little bit of all of those as well. But we know pregnancy is going to advance those clocks and then go back to baseline afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? Like pregnancy, a fetus just sucks everything out of you, all nutrients, all energy. Like you said, it's a massive stressor on the body for 9 months. It's also probably that period of time that does it as well. It's like 9 months is a long time to do that to the human body. It's not just like a quick 1 week thing and then the body can go back. It's like, no. And then obviously birth in itself is a major stressor. So that probably amplifies it during that period of time as well. But it's interesting that you said 2 to 3 months postpartum, because I would think like with a newborn, like lack of sleep, lack of energy, like maybe it would take longer to bounce back, but maybe the body is actually just more resilient than it might seem in that time.
Yeah. And the study I'm talking about in particular, happy to share the link if anyone's interested. It's a pretty cool study. It's titled Biological Ages Increased by Stress and Restored Upon Recovery by Dr. Jesse Poganik under Vadim Gladyshev's lab at Harvard. So they really specialize in kind of aging and using epigenetics to really study that process. They looked at three major stressors: pregnancy, severe COVID-19, and then elected and unelected surgery too. So they did see a bounce back even just within that you know, little time frame. So I'm just as surprised as you are, I think, but wonder if we could even see maybe a better bounce back or even a further decline if they waited, you know, a little bit longer too after testing. So very introductory based study, right? Makes sense that these stressors would increase biological age, but more definitely needs to be done.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're breastfeeding as well, which is, you know, taxing on the body, and like women are supposed to have about 500 calories extra a day during breastfeeding to make up for the like higher calorie burn that they have. So I just wonder how that plays with it. But that's the thing when we are looking at like such new ways of looking at human biology and longevity is like a test that's going to look at breastfeeding and biological age is so far from happening. Like, unfortunately, right? Like it's unfortunate. Like I'm sure it will happen, but it probably won't happen for quite a while because there's just not, I guess, enough demand or money behind it or whatever the reasoning. So we just kind of have to put the pieces together ourselves and assume, or just get tested ourselves when we go through those phases as well. Like, I guess that would also work. On the other side though, like when women go through menopause, what have you kind of seen there in terms of like premenopause and menopause and even postmenopause?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. You know, we absolutely know that the more we can really kind of delay menopause, the better, right? So there have been some studies that have been around even since 2016, really looking at menopause and of course how it accelerates biological aging. So I definitely don't think that is new, but there are specific positions on the DNA that are highly associated with just age at menopause. And these positions in particular exhibit a significant association with epigenetic age acceleration. So if we can delay menopause by any means, then we can hopefully, you know, understand that we can slow down these biological age clocks a little bit more. So there's a lot of work going into kind of menopause in general, epigenetic biological aging, you know, different stages at our lifetime. My like, you know, dream study, Brittany, would actually be to measure, you know, pregnancy, measure these epigenetic DNA methylation markers basically every day, every second of every day in pregnancy. And, you know, a really large scale study if you had that, you know, funding and information. But yeah, there are even, I would say, a lot of studies that go as far as measuring, you know, ART and IVF. You know, there are a lot of correlations and differences showing epigenetic age acceleration by a lot of the clocks between kind of IVF-based mothers and artificial reproductive technology mothers as well. So I think, again, very early, but we know there's some type of correlation or connection there.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting as well. Yeah, I mean, yeah, women go through so many hormonal changes and stages in life that it's hard to know like how it's actually impacting you on such a micro level. Whereas men, it's like they don't have these distinct stages that are different, that kind of stand out, that say, you know, your body's changing this time and it's going to be like this and then it's going to this. And so it's, yeah, it's just very interesting. I also wonder if there will be one day, like looking at the correlation between like success rates for fertility in general and conception and what your biological age says. Like we now see that like it's about 1 in 6 couples are having fertility challenges. So what if we started studying those 1 in 6 couples or all 6 of those couples and looked at their biological ages for men and for women and just saw if there was some sort of correlation, because that's what I want to know. Like, and then obviously it would relate to their lifestyle, diet, and all of these other things, but I would still love to see some sort of data like that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And we'll definitely learn more as, you know, we go through. I think something in particular that may be a little bit more actionable right now that you'd be interested in is actually the relationship that we found with epigenetics and postpartum depression. So, you know, we sit in a really interesting space, Brittany. It's so cool because, you know, I'm extremely familiar with all the research behind epigenetics and aging, but it's also just so early that it's really hard to push a lot of these to application. One company though that has basically done this is called Dionysus Health. And basically, you know, I think your audience is really familiar with postpartum depression, but it's really the most common complication of childbirth, period. You know, even those who have mental illnesses, they're at an increased risk, and it can occur just spontaneously to about 15% of the population. So it can really happen to any mother to be. We do not know who's, you know, at really risk for postpartum depression unless they had a previous mental illness diagnosis. So this is also, you know, an outcome that really goes unrecognized, right? Mothers don't understand they're kind of going through this depression when they're busy with, you know, raising a baby, you know, all these other stressors, not getting enough sleep, the fatigue of caring for a newborn. So that can really hamper, you know, treatment initiation. What we found though is that by scanning epigenetic biomarkers during pregnancy, we can predict a woman's risk to developing depression after giving birth. That is just profound. I don't understand why every mother is not doing this, right? If I can tell you, one of my absolute best friends, she just had a baby February 5th. And, you know, if I could have done testing on her beforehand, or it's just like, you know, you give a blood sample, you kind of scan through and go through your results on this app and tell her if she was more likely to get postpartum depression, to start doing things to change those outcomes, you know, like meditation techniques, or again, really, you know, looking inward on your lifestyle to reduce that risk. I mean, that's just huge. And then you can retake the test and actually see that risk decline.
Wow. Yeah, that is huge. That is huge. So how does that actually show up on the test? What is the marker that says, hey, this might be indicative of you developing this condition later on?
Yeah. So I'm going to get more into the science here. Tell me if I need to back up. But that's where this answer lies, right? We're very big on only using kind of this scientific evidence. But basically, women at risk to reproductive depressions like PPD are really sensitive to different periods of, you know, hormonal changes like we've been mentioning. So this research, again, has been around for, you know, a couple of decades now, but they basically paired epigenomic profiling of what we call these estrogen responsive loci in mouse brain with postpartum depression associated methylome profiling of blood in, you know, human mothers to be. So they're kind of matching what we've seen in animal models to humans to find genes that are actually going to be sensitive to hormone withdrawal. So we're really in that kind of cross comparison study, they're really identifying the first mental illness predictive epigenetic biomarkers ever discovered. And what they really found was the status, or they looked at the methylation, kind of the level of expressions on two genes, this TTC9B and HP1BP3, that actually, when you model them together, they predict the future risk of postpartum depression with an 85% accuracy rate, which is huge. And that TTC gene I mentioned is associated with estrogen activity, while the HP1B gene mediates really anxiety in female mice in particular. And when you kind of knock out that gene or get rid of it, it's really sad actually. But if you get rid of that in pregnant mothers, their pups or you know, the baby mice actually tend to pass away and die because the mother stopped taking care of them because they have such increased anxiety. So clearly those genes are really important. And they've revalidated the importance of those genes in, you know, about 10 additional published, unpublished cohorts. So really pushing this to the forefront of female reproductive medicine and health is going to be huge.
Wow, that is so interesting. I need to look further into this because it's not something I have thought about or researched or even connected those dots in any type of way. I mean, this is not my area of expertise in terms of the epigenetic factors. And so, yeah, I find that very, very interesting because if you could do this test and you could know, hey, I'm more susceptible to this, like you said, like, why wouldn't you do the things that we know can kind of support mental health right now? You know, even counseling, talk therapy, getting out in nature, meditating, journaling, all of these different practices that have been shown to actually make a difference. So, yeah, I'm going to dig into that after this because I'm very interested in it. And I'm glad that we're seeing that type of research happen because, you know, as you know, a lot of women are kind of left out of the research for so long and it has changed, but it took a long time to change. So I'm glad we are, you know, making these correlations now. So looking forward, what are the new things that are coming up this year for True Diagnostic?
Yeah. So a lot of really cool things on the forefront that includes new reporting. So one of the reports that we'll have, Brittany, is actually called our Symphony Age report. that we created with Yale, which is the reporting of 11 different organ systems that hasn't been done before. So, you know, you're going to get better resolution on what to work on from an organ system level. For example, they include things like a brain age or liver age or blood age, hormone age, heart, a couple others as well that I didn't name. But, you know, we'll be able to make direct recommendations and kind of based on organ function and vitality. So I think, you know, that's really, really huge. We're getting more into recommendations as well. You know, really we don't like to call ourselves a biological age testing company. We like to call ourselves an epigenetic testing company, meaning we're using epigenetics as a biomarker to report out other outcomes. So we're really betting on epigenetics being the biomarker of the future and not just stopping at biological aging. So we're really excited to see and understand kind of the expansiveness, I should say, of the outcomes and what we're measuring.
Yeah, because it's like you said, there is so many different directions that you could take it. And, you know, biological age is one factor. And I think people are really interested in it, right? It has this like very personal aspect to it. So it's probably why it's doing so well. But like you said, like there's just so many different ways that you can take this. And I'm excited to see what comes forward with you this year and then the years to come. So if someone's like, okay, I'm ready to get tested, I want to do this, how can they find you and where can they connect with you?
Yeah, for sure. I, you know, obviously welcome all conversation, feedback, you know, anything outside of epigenetics to get to know each and every one of you. So I am on Instagram at Everything Epigenetics as a way to educate people about epigenetics and keep you up to date on the latest and greatest research and science. You can also just go to True Diagnostic, you know, on all social media platforms and learn a little bit more about our product offerings and even order a kit if you want to start to get tested at TrueDiagnostic.com too.
Amazing. Okay. I will link that in the show notes, put it on my website as well. Thank you so much for coming on today. This was great. I learned a lot and I know my listeners definitely did as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Brittany. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Biohacking with Brittany. If you're interested in finding the show notes or the sponsors for this episode, you can do so on my website, which is biohackingbrittany.com. Remember to follow me on Instagram where I'm most active. My handle is @biohackingbrittany. And if you're interested in working together and you want to email me directly, you can do that. My email is info@biohackingbrittany.com. And I look forward to hearing from you and having you tune in next week.